Would you like to come and stall it?
Ah, will you just stall it, look?
I'd like to come and stall it.
I'm not really in the mood.
Well, come on and bleed and stall it.
Yeah, house hatcher.
I'm not a house hatcher.
We'll stall it for a crack. We're gonna have a laugh.
Welcome back to the second part of the, what are we going to call this? Like the moon landing special?
Yeah, what do we call it?
Call it what you want.
The Apollo 11 special? No, people won't know what the fuck that is.
The people wouldn't.
Well, no, I don't think so.
I think you're probably right.
One small step for mankind. Or it's the other way around, isn't it? One small step for man. Was that what it was?
That can
one
be part one.
For mankind. Is that right?
Right, last thing we talked about was Apollo 8.
Do you want to hear me joke though?
Oh, sorry, yeah.
What? Sure about the pub on the moon?
No.
There was no atmosphere.
We'll just pause there, let people finish their laughs. Okay. It was nice.
Did you like that?
I liked that.
I thought you were going to say
I've heard that before,
out of this world.
I had totally forgotten that.
I said that at the live show. I flipped it there. I think at the live show I said, did you hear about the restaurant on the moon? There was no atmosphere. But I said pub instead because I think pubs have more of an atmosphere. So it's kind of, so the joke is, Roy.
Do you want to hear about
no
Apollo 11?
Apollo 11?
We get
the biggie?
There. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Right.
Last we left off was Apollo 8 and they'd done the little tests on 9 and 10. And then it was time for the big one. Apollo 11. Three astronauts. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin and...
Michael Collins.
Hey. Good man.
No, me shit.
Nobody knows Michael Collins. Apart from Joe.
Apart from him.
His name is familiar.
And the sad thing is, probably the best of the three.
The best?
If you wanted to be at a party with any of those three, there is no question it is Michael Collins.
Just for his name alone?
And he went to the moon. Well, went around the moon.
Pretty cool, Larry.
Armstrong, he was a pilot. They're all pilots. But he was a pilot in the for the Navy in the Korean War. He was 38 on Apollo 11, born very small town on a farm in Ohio. Very quiet fella, very reserved, showed very little emotion unless he felt like it and you knew him really well. And even then, a lot of times he just kept himself to himself.
A bit like yourself, Joe.
Yeah, yeah, keeping your head down.
Pretty awkward, especially when he was in public. Didn't like doing interviews or speaking publicly or any of that stuff.
Is he introverted?
Very, yeah, yeah.
Bit like yourself, Ed.
I was just going to say.
He was, as you'd imagine, obsessed with planes as a kid. He used to build it in one models and he was an engineer as well. That's just the thing. They were all scientists. He'd get his younger siblings to go upstairs, throw the wooden plane out the window. He'd have put like a little wooden ice cream stick in the garden, try and hit it, and then he'd go down with his notebook and measure where it landed and do tests to see if he could get it closer, if he could build the plane differently.
Fucking loser.
Yeah.
Fucking loser.
What a geek.
He ended up building a wind tunnel in his basement when he was 14.
What a strange boy.
Yeah.
Very odd.
When he was 6, his dad brought him to an air show. He got to fly in a tiny little plane and that was it. His life's obsession. He's like, I want to be a pilot. I want to fly planes.
Sure, it all would have been kicking off. You were saying that airplanes didn't even, like, jet planes. Oh, in his lifetime, he's seeing commercial jet planes to lunar travel.
So he's born in, what, 1931, I suppose? Yeah, so.
And war. World War.
Yep.
He's seen it all.
He starts taking flying lessons when he's 14. He has his flying license when he's 16 or 15, before he can drive. And he's a very good pilot. When he's in the Korean War. The Koreans used to put these wires across valleys so the pilots couldn't see them, with the intention, obviously, of taking down the planes. One hit the wing of his plane. Big chunk, a big important chunk of the wing falls off.
There's no not important chunk of a wing. It's all pretty important.
It was called the alien. Oh, fuck, I should know this. It was more important. If you have a more important part of the wing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
It was the
like
bit
the engine.
It's a bit that let him control the...
Just a bit off the corner.
The phalange.
He knew he couldn't eject because he'd be caught by the Koreans. He managed to land it safely in a
some
rice paddy field miles away. Broke his coccyx. His arse bone.
As well?
I thought you were going to say he broke his cock.
He was on the Harden. Like, very excited by the whole thing. He really loved plants.
Man, this fella loved plants a lot.
He fucking loved plants.
And everyone was like, that was pretty fucking impressive that he didn't die there. Most people would have died there. Then he became a test pilot. And they're the crazy ones. This plane that goes several times the speed of sound, we've not really tried it out before, but do you want to hop in it and take it as far up in the sky as you
Absolutely.
Can? Absolutely. I think the count of times he almost died before Apollo 11 was 7 times. He bounced off the atmosphere once in a plane.
Hey, when that happens.
Managed to...
Nothing worse than bouncing off the atmosphere.
Oh, really. Fucking...
Yeah. He flew over 200 different aircraft while testing them. I don't know if that includes the old spaceship, but yeah, he flew everything and he was able to fly everything. And one of the reasons NASA wanted him was because pretty much no matter what happened, he just didn't ever get ruffled. He just never, ever got stressed. He was odd. Very odd.
Psychopathic,
man.
Probably.
A nice man, no.
A nice psychopath, like not a murderous one.
He was considered a very decent fella. Just, you know, kind of obsessed with what he did.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah, and while they're training for...
Passionate.
Yeah, while they're training for Apollo 11 and he's in the like a testing version of the lunar lander, that crashes, but he ejects with, they reckon, less than a second before he would have died.
Jesus.
Yeah.
When they were testing it?
Yeah.
And what were they testing it on?
It wasn't that one exactly. It was like a... Earth version.
Oh, like
they was a rogue.
They tried to make it feel like the gravity of the moon.
Mm.
At least twice, he almost died, and he just went straight back to his desk, started doing paperwork. I was like, "This what's?
This is not right.
This fella's just not bothered about anything." Which, to a worrying degree, he had 2 sons with his wife, and they had a daughter. Her name was Karen. His nickname for her was Muffy, short for Muffin. When she was 1, she fell in the playground, hit her head. Later that night, she had nosebleeds and her eyes weren't working properly, so they brought her to hospital for tests. Something was clearly wrong over the next few weeks, and they realised she had a tumour on her brain stem. And he did everything he could. He called every doctor and specialist. He tried to learn as much as he could about the condition, and he was incredibly intelligent. But there was just no cure for this particular type of cancer. And Karen died when she was 2.
2?
Jeez.
Oh, and then, God. Yeah.
That's horrific.
He never talked to anyone about it, including his wife. Even people who worked with him for years would be surprised to find out he had had a daughter, because he just wouldn't talk about it. He was very upset about it.
When was this? Like, what point in his career?
This was 1962. So this is, people later on who would write books about him and spend many years speaking to people who knew him and speaking to him will be able to say pretty confidently he was absolutely heartbroken. It wasn't that it didn't affect him. He just didn't talk about it. He went straight back to flying. I don't even think he took. And a few months later, he applied to be an astronaut. He'd actually missed the deadline, which wasn't like him. Someone slipped his application into the middle of the pile. Sneaky, yeah. Sneaky, make sure you get in.
Nice. They were all aware of him.
Nice though. To have friends like that, innit?
His biographer later on, a fellow called James Hansen, he spoke to him and he came away, although Armstrong would never fully admit it, but convinced that it was the grief over his daughter that made him want to become an astronaut. It was just a way of dealing with it. The only way it seems he knew how to deal with something like that was to throw himself completely into something. Mm. He was also very, very close. If he had any, he did have friends, but like the people he was particularly close to, one of them was Ed White, who was one of the guys who died in Apollo 1. Again, he didn't really talk about that. And there was another test pilot before they were even flying the spaceships, 2 years earlier, who had been very close to, who had died. So he'd lost his daughter and a couple of close friends, but he just didn't speak about it.
Can anyone apply to be an astronaut, or do you have to be in like the army?
Yeah, it's like Dublin Bus.
Is it? Yeah, yeah. It's like we're looking for astronauts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to get the application form for the NASA job.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I couldn't find it.
Imagine that, just saying that on indeed.com.
There's like heights and weights and being able to withstand astronaut temperatures and all sorts of stuff. So that's Armstrong.
Some lad.
Pretty in control of his emotions in one respect.
Mm.
If in a crashing plane, pretty good at that sort of thing.
Yeah, like if there was, his plane was going down, would he just be sitting there like that? It's, oh, well.
Yeah.
I'd be fucking shitting. I'd be screaming and all. Trying to have a fucking smoke and I mean, we'll have smoke.
Oh, I really wish I'd been able to find that application form for the astronaut job. See how you do it, dude.
I was on a an airplane and it was a near-death experience.
I feel like every time you get on an airplane, it's a near-death experience.
No, they literally said it.
They said to you, he's nearly died.
They told us to pray on the intercom.
To pray?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No way. What kind of airline was this?
Say our prayers, ladies and gentlemen. I said, okay. How are you, mommy? How are you, daddy? No, it was rocking the fuck, though. Let's talk about the moon.
I believe it. Believe it.
Number two on Apollo 11, Buzz Aldrin. Edwin Eugene Aldrin Jr.
Not to be mistaken for Edwin...
Senior.
Whatever he said, senior.
Why is he called Buzz?
Because his sister...
Loves Toy Story.
Star Command. Come in, Star Command.
She used to mispronounce the word brother as buzzer.
Oh.
And they shortened it to Buzz. Buzz Aldrin Sr. sounds like a real prick. He never let his son forget that he was the second man on the moon. Yeah. Also a pilot. He had flown combat missions. He'd shot down two enemy pilots. You know, he had all those credentials. He was also, he had a PhD from MIT in orbital mechanics. He wrote the doctoral thesis on manned orbital rendezvous, which is when two spaceships click together. Very important part to make sure everyone doesn't die. So he was the expert on that. Bit of a prick himself.
Ah, yeah, well, of course he is. Fucking someone who... Most people who have PhDs are pricks. That's what the P stands for.
Nothing.
A prick in high definition.
Arrogant. Mm-hmm. Just said what he wanted. Mm. The rest of the astronauts called him Dr. Rendezvous. Which I don't think is the worst nickname, but he suspected it was an insult.
Sounds like a Bond villain.
I was literally thinking that. And I was going to say it, but I didn't.
You should have, because it was fucking hilarious. And I got all the laughs for that. I got all the credit now.
Yeah. So, because if you got stuck in a corner with Buzz, he talked to you about orbital rendezvous.
Darren has his hand up.
Yeah.
How's it going? I love the podcast. Did they name Buzz Lightyear after Buzz Aldrin?
Oh, yeah.
Were you going to get to that? Or was that just not integral to the story at all?
Buzz Aldrin, like, he's got a very full media career after all this. He's in 30 Rock, he's in The Simpsons. Buzz Lightyear is named after him. He did a song with Snoop Dogg.
Who did? Jesus Christ.
Buzz Aldrin did?
Yeah, it seems Buzz Aldrin before the moon was no crack. Buzz Aldrin after the moon was a good bit more crack. Although he was still, he does a lot of things during this that are pretty funny, but I don't think he means them to be funny. And he kind of was obsessed with, I think this is common enough among astronauts, being the best at everything. There's a story another astronaut tells of, he came in for his interview to be an astronaut. Aldrin walks in wearing his ring from West Point, which is like the
Super Bowl ring.
The elite military college or whatever. And then he's wearing his Air Force wings and his...
It's a bit like
college
that time,
on his tie.
It's a bit like that time Joe came in with a NASCAR jacket full of sponsors that sponsored him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They said, Buzz, you've already read your resume. You didn't need to wear it, would you? And he'd sit there all night drinking scotch and talking about orbital rendezvous and getting in arguments with people and then get up in the morning and go off and do the training, which was horrible. Norman Mailer, a famous writer from back in the 60s, wrote a book about the moon landing. He said Buzz Aldrin was all meat and stone. That's how we described him.
That's one way.
All meat and stone.
All meat and stone.
Yeah.
That tells a lot.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right. Number three.
Yeah.
Michael Collins, the command module pilot. He would have a pretty important job. He wouldn't be going to the moon, but he basically had to get them there.
I feel sorry for him.
Help them get down, and he had to get them back. Granddad was from Cork.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Jeez. No way. I didn't know
from
that.
Dunmanway in County Cork. Jeremiah Collins, his wife... was the daughter of a man from Mayo.
Bloody hell.
Is he any relation to the Michael Collins?
Surely somewhere along the line.
Well, they got the same name.
I mean, if your dad's from Cork and it wouldn't have been, like, he would have been born pretty close to 1916, so his dad would be fully aware who Michael Collins was. Like, even just a big fan. Just a big fan.
Yeah.
Probably on something there, Joe. His dad and his granddad were both generals in the army. He was born in Rome in Italy because his dad was stationed over there. Moved around loads. He became a test pilot like Armstrong. the crazy ones, flying all the crazy planes. He also was in Air Force or Navy, flying combat missions and so on, and just a very good pilot. His most important job out of all of it was to make sure to get them home. He'd have to wait up there on his own. We'll talk about that a bit more in a minute, but he wore around his neck a lanyard and on it a notebook in which he had written 18 scenarios, things that could go wrong while they were trying to land on the moon and how he had to deal with them, including him having to fly back on his own. And he was very specifically picked for this job because he basically had what it took to manage that pressure. Very, very reliable, but also great crack, unlike the other two.
I don't think he didn't get the job because he was great crack.
No, he didn't. That was just an aside. He ended up writing a book, which is, I think, considered to be, by a distance, the best book by any astronaut.
Oh, really?
Really good. Very good writer, yeah. Okay. He was a big poetry and literature man, you know, in his spare time.
Mm.
Very good writer. He applied to be an astronaut the first time. He didn't get it, but when he applied, they did the Rorschach, is that how it pronounced it?
Rorschach, yeah.
Thank you. That test where they show you, like, the blob.
Oh, okay.
They say, what do you see? Blah, blah.
Death.
And they show him one where it's just a white page. There is no blob. And he says, well, of course, that's 11 polar bears fornicating in a snowbank.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
This is in his book. He says, I could see the examiner's eyes kind of tighten. He didn't think that was funny. Like I said, he'd be the one you'd want to be stuck with at a session rather than Buzz talking about his orbital rendezvous. Yeah, so he was the command module pilot. So that was the three of them. Armstrong was the first to be told they were going on the mission, and he was given the option of replacing Aldrin because Aldrin was such a pain in the hole.
Really?
Yeah. They were like, listen, you'll be okay living with him in that tiny little capsule for 8 days. He's like, he went, he actually slept on it. He's like, maybe.
Was he that much of a dickhead?
He was very difficult.
Was he?
But he, in the end, he's like, yeah, he actually is really good though. And if we get in trouble up there, he's kind of who you'd want there, figuring things out. Go on. You don't need to raise your hand.
How's it going? Love the podcast.
Hey.
Big fan, listen to all of them, and I've listened to them back 4 times.
Thank you. Go on, ask a question.
Was Stretch Armstrong named after him?
I couldn't say either way.
I'm actually intrigued. I think that's a pretty interesting question.
Is it worth a Google?
Well, I mean, yeah, it wasn't Stretch Armstrong supposed to be a kind of...
What was he?
American...
Like a superhero.
He was like an army soldier, I think.
So, yeah.
I used to have one, and he just had a black vest top on.
I think they all did, didn't they?
No, he had no vest on. Stretch Armstrong was not named after a specific person.
Yeah, right.
That's probably illegal. Thing.
Sorry for asking that one.
No, I think that's important.
Yeah.
I think that's important. We need to know these things.
Look, if it was the case, then it just goes to show the impact. You know?
Yep.
Everyone's getting named after him.
Armstrong is a great second name.
It's a strong name, literally.
Armstrong.
Just one arm. Not Armstrong.
Was he good at an arm wrestle?
Not after he came back. Little jelly legs.
Only for a while.
Oh, came back, so you're starting to...
Maybe he went to space, but I don't know if he went to the moon.
At the start of Apollo 11, they really didn't give it much chance. There was loads they didn't know. They didn't know the lunar lander, which was to land on the moon. Obviously, they'd never been able to land that. They didn't know what the moon's surface was like. They didn't know if it was going to collapse as soon as the lander touched it. They didn't know if it was going to go on fire because the heat from the engine on the lander. All these things they had no idea about. So they had a lot to hope for the best with. The lunar lander, which is this fella here. Right?
Yep.
That would be called Eagle.
The Eagle has landed.
Exactly. That's Ooh. Eagle. This one over here is Columbia. This is the command module.
The Columbia has landed.
Mm. Columbia's landed, you're in trouble.
The Columbia has hit the moon. Very hard.
Ooh, the boys are mush.
Okay. On Apollo 10, they called them Charlie Brown and Snoopy.
What, the
lads there?
Yeah, the astronauts called their...
if these
Snoopy
go out,
was the module, I think, or the, yeah, and the lander was Charlie Brown. I'm going to lift it up though. Have a look.
So this one is the...
That's Eagle. The lunar lander.
The Eagle has landed. That'll come off that and go...
Yeah, well... Now we're getting into the rocket science. And the sound effects are always welcome, I think.
Okay.
The training was relentless. You're doing hundreds of hours in the simulators for both of them. They train in zero gravity conditions. They were doing geology in Arizona and Iceland. Actually, all they had to do when they got there was collect rocks.
Yeah.
But it was important they collected rocks well because, you know... Might not be going back again.
Can you buy moon rock? Is that where you get your crystals? Is that moon rocks?
I fucking wish.
You can't buy any moon rock that was brought back, not legally anyway, but you can get moon rock that landed here.
I want the meteor from up there though.
No, it's from the moon, but it landed here like a meteor.
So the moon rock that they brought back, did they bring back much of it?
Yeah. Fair back.
Bags of it.
Yeah.
Bags of it. They just went up there with little bags and stuff.
Yeah. Black bags.
Pack them out.
Bin bags. Yeah. Fucking get more of them there, yeah.
Fucking nothing left of the moon.
Throw a few more. You'll fit more than that, Lance Armstrong, you little dope.
You would, wouldn't you though?
Hang on, Lance Armstrong. Yeah, yeah.
Lance, he's the
fucking cyclist.
Cyclist, yeah.
Are they related?
Again, they're the same second name, so.
Fucking hell, I thought they would have been. Anyway.
Never know.
I meant to say Neil Armstrong is saying, for fuck's sake, Neil, get that blading rock in there, will you?
Right, the training.
In the black. I'm getting to that point where I just start shouting out.
Yeah, yeah.
Love it.
So the worst part of the training was the centrifuge.
Centrifuge. No.
It's a steel ball, 10 feet by 6 feet. It's at the end of a 50-foot arm. Have you seen The Simpsons where Homer goes space?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
This is going to help illustrate it. If you've seen it, have you seen it?
Yes,
I have seen it.
They're spinning around really fast and it turns into Popeye.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
the
centrifuge. Gets the G-force up to 6 or 7, which is your body weight 6 or 7 times because of gravity.
So they spin around real fast and you're at the end of it.
Yeah, very quickly you'd get tunnel vision. The colour would go out of your vision.
Jesus.
Chest pressure would be, you could breathe in, but then you couldn't
breathe out.
Fill your lungs again. You could breathe out, but you couldn't fill your lungs in. Yeah, it was like a metal band. The blood would all flow to your legs. You'd be...
All of it?
Yeah, pretty much. You'd be hoping to pass out. You'd probably want to die.
So how does
extreme
this
nausea. It took the most ridiculously intense physical effort just to stay conscious. And the reason they did this was because...
It's like, you know when do you know what it's like?
The Waltzers.
Kind of like the Waltzers, you know, you're spinning real fast and you're just like, oh, I kind of want, your face is pulling back and everything.
Your cheek is going that way, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you can stay on the Waltzers for 10 minutes, you can go to space.
So they're training and doing this for what?
For this, the rocket going...
Oh, right. So that initial...
This is because if they're coming...
The speed of it, like.
Yeah, there will be points, particularly when they're coming back... Or if something goes wrong, but almost certainly when they're coming back to re-entry, the G-forces on their body could be that high. So they need to learn to stay conscious. And also, not only stay conscious, but, you know, fly a spaceship.
Mm.
Because their life will depend on it.
Because you could collapse with that speed. It just, like, pass out, like, yeah.
And they said it was...
happened to me on the extreme in Funderland once.
Funderland, yeah.
With Amy, a long time ago.
You get sick and everything.
Oh, I fainted on it.
Did you faint?
Yeah, like that. And I went, oh. It's kind of like that.
You'd never be an astronaut on the extreme.
Ooh. Don't underestimate the extreme.
They used to call it the torture chamber.
I'd like to do that. I would genuinely, I've always wanted to do that. I'd just like to see, I know, but I'd like to see how many J's I could get to before I pass out. Because that's what they did. They went to the point that he...
Who has the highest J's? Is there a record?
Well, people used to do it like almost for the crack, apparently. Yeah, they used to like, I'll see if I can do 20 hours and stuff.
So that's what you want to do for the crack then, yeah?
For the crack, yeah. Be fun.
Weird. It's just this pretty relentless and in some ways horrific training schedule. And also, it's not just that. They're learning loads of physics and engineering and everything. Like Michael Collins had like a book and wrote himself like 120-130 pages of like the most intricate maths and everything. Because there's a lot of very complicated stuff they have to remember.
Hang on, my brain is just calculating something.
Do you want to know what the highest G-force?
Oh, I wanted to read it.
Oh, sorry.
So it made
it look like I just got...
Because I could see it in Darren's face and he knew. What is it?
Oh, go on. Oh, you've already...
2003, at a crash at the Texas Motor Speedway, Swedish IndyCar driver Kenny Brack experienced a peak deceleration of 214
G. Shut up. How? Not in a car.
For a fraction of a second when his car collided with another vehicle and a steel fence post, despite suffering multiple fractures, including his femur, sternum, lumbar vertebrae and ankles, survived due to the extremely brief duration of the force. But yeah, momentary G-force of 214.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Your brain would just like squash right up to the front of your skull and just like flatten out.
Your eyes would pop out, sure.
Yeah.
Like a cartoon.
you'd rip your brain off your stem, your brain stem, like it would just tear. Anyway, that's crazy.
Thanks for the information.
I was thinking like 4Gs. I could do like 4Gs or something.
Yeah.
Or 5G.
Yeah, I do 5G.
And to go with all that, they know the pressure of it because this is, would have seemed like to them, since it kind of was, the future of global society could have hinged in a lot of ways on if they did this or not. If they win that space race. They didn't know at this stage that the Russians weren't going to make it. They know that at the very least, their country's reputation is on their shoulders.
Mm.
Also, they could die. They would spend hundreds of hours, Aldrin and Armstrong, in the Eagle.
In the Eagle, the bottom Eagle,
the bottom one. Right, the Eagle, the lunar module, lunar lander. That was the first ever true spaceship. So the first vehicle ever that would only travel in space, never in the Earth's atmosphere. And that's why it looks so strange. It looks like a spider with spindly legs because it didn't need aerodynamics. Because there's no resistance.
Do they still have eagles now?
In museums.
Mm.
They'd run it again and again in the simulator, but it's never the real machine. Obviously, they can't properly replicate it. They would be the first ones ever to fly it close to the moon's surface. Not only, there's no way to do a proper dress rehearsal, but it had two jobs. One to land, but just as important, maybe more important, was to get them back off the moon.
Mm.
So, the top part here,
if you'll bear with me,
called the ascent stage, where they sit. When they're ready to go home, this pops off.
See you later.
And meets Michael Collins.
See you in a while.
Look.
See you after.
Now, for some very good technical reason, I can't fully explain to you, but I can tell you it is very true. They could never test that engine before using it.
Jesus.
The engine that was to get them back up could only ever be used once.
The lads aren't aware of this.
They'd been briefed on the risks, yeah.
Because I would have been like, hell no.
Why yeah.
Getting on that.
So,
you fucking do it.
What do you mean you didn't test it? Off your head or what? Is that all right? Is that good to go, yeah? Did you check it out? Yeah, no, yeah. We checked, yeah.
Yeah, no, walks, brand new.
Yeah, walk away. Go on, go on.
Quick spin, it's grand, yeah.
Get up there.
You'll be back in no time.
Only fucking 8 days or something. Go on.
Other thing is, it only has one engine. The liftoff rocket had five, so if one didn't work, you were okay. This only had one.
Oh, Jesus.
This is why Richard Nixon had written the speech. The other thing that's in here was the Apollo guidance computer.
The Apollo computer.
This was back in the days when a computer was the size of a room.
Just one computer the size.
One computer, yeah. But people back then thought bigger is better. Look at the size of my computer. That kind of thing.
No small.
I remember that. I remember being like, look at that beast.
Look at that Dell yoke.
But it was the Apollo computer that changed that to smaller is better. Because it was the first time. And obviously, this ended up having quite a good resume. And people are like, look what a small computer can do. That's pretty cool. Because it was the size of a briefcase. It had a memory of 74 kilobytes.
Jesus.
And it had the RAM, so things it could do at once, of 4 kilobytes.
Kilobytes?
Now,
which is...
In the same way, I'm not a rocket scientist or physicist. I'm also no kind of computer expert of any kind.
Oh,
but a WhatsApp text message, no pictures, no videos, is between 1 and 5.
It's one message?
Yeah.
What about an AI-generated photo?
Couldn't tell you, but I know your phone has many...
Speak of?
Yep. Many millions of times more memory and power than this computer did.
But at the time, that computer was like the best thing that's ever been built in terms of what they needed for.
Compared to today, it was terrible. But like, there wasn't really computers. The word software didn't even really exist the way we know it now. It did, but not in the same way. Being generous, you might compare the power of it to a Commodore 64.
That's a pretty good fucking machine.
Yeah. But it had limitations. Like if something was to go wrong, it couldn't tell you what was going wrong. It would just flash a number up. And you'd have to know what that number meant. It wouldn't tell you.
How would they?
They'd have them all written down somewhere.
All right.
And there was a lot of different codes that they could get. Because there was no other computer to check the codes. They didn't have those things. So they had to write them out.
They had them in a 2001 Space Odyssey.
Just saying.
Just saying, are you?
Was that really in it as well?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Like, the stuff that 2001 Space Odyssey, like, got right was incredible.
Those warning codes, they'd learn the most common ones off by heart. The other ones, they'd write little notes and they'd stick them in the cockpit of the lunar lander. Not with Post-its, though, because they hadn't been invented yet.
Post-its hadn't been invented?
Neither had wheels on suitcases. That was another thing. Digital watches hadn't been invented.
Well, the digital watch one, I probably would have guessed.
Post-it Casio, notes, basic
just
Casio.
Spitting on paper and sticking it on the wall.
Probably be flying around all over the place anyway.
Yeah. A lot of stuff that we have now was the result of this computer. Because things like, they get 1,000 chips from IBM or whoever. And if one didn't work, they'd send the whole lot back. So the computer chip makers got a lot better at what they were doing. Because they were buying so many chips, the price over the course of the Apollo program went from $1,000 to $1.98. Because they were buying so many, which meant they had to make so many more. The move into modern computer technology supercharged by this. And also, people were, they didn't have a lot of faith in technology before this. But after it, they're like, oh, look what the computer did.
Can take us to the moon.
Like one. Yeah. Mm. All this wasn't going very well. Up to a few weeks before the launch date, they were still crashing in the simulator. The computer was crashing. Michael Collins' books writes about he walked into, one night he walks into Buzz Aldrin's room in their accommodation, and him and Armstrong are there because Armstrong had crashed the lunar lander, and Buzz is like, you killed me in the simulation. Don't kill me on the moon. And Collins just, not his scene, just backed out, left him to it.
Just a little creak in the door.
They'd get loads of fan mail when they were getting ready to go. Michael Collins got a letter from a man in Israel who warned him that they shouldn't go to the moon because it was home to a colony of giant ants. And if you land on one of the anthills, it's going to be a disaster. And he said, oh, but I can send you a map to tell you where all the anthills are so you know where to avoid. For a price.
For a price.
For a price.
How much are we talking?
I wonder how much he was talking, yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I'd have fell for it. Was that name your price? I want to avoid them anthills.
Yeah, I want to be fucking landing on them anthills.
They reckon they had about a 90% chance of coming home safely. So we're a good bit up on Apollo 8 now.
I'd take them odds.
It's better than 5%.
Yeah. Actually landing on the moon, 50-50.
The legs could have fell off and...
they'd actually get there. Earthquake, fire, all sorts of stuff that could possibly happen.
Earthquake.
That's why the feet moonquake on the lunar lander, they're huge wide pads like snowshoes because they were worried that the ground would collapse underneath them. They were worried that the lunar dust, when it came into contact with the oxygen inside their little cabin in the lunar lander, that it would go on fire.
Were they?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they didn't know what it was made of. They thought, based on what they did know of the universe, could be this type of...
Is the moon quite boring?
Oh, yeah. There's nothing there. Just a big rock. That's all it is.
Really, really
it
boring.
Huge like mountains and craters and stuff.
Yeah, but it's like grey and nothing.
It's very grey.
So it's all rock. Everything.
Dust, really.
Big rocks, dust. Small rocks, dusts.
I'd say if you got close to it, I'd say if you were in one of them craters, you'd see like diamonds from the impact of whatever crater it was that created them. Like those craters are miles wide.
Mm.
Like they're fucking hundreds of miles wide.
Like big manholes.
Massive, massive manholes. And they're created by asteroids. And those asteroids have to have some sort of minerals on them that would create a crystal. So I'd say you'd get some spectacular crystals up there if you had the time to look around. Telling you.
I'll have to try and find the time to look around the moon for some time.
Bring a bag with you.
Black bag.
Another little bit of their prep was when they come back. I'm sure you've seen the pictures. Like when the little command module, the little cone-shaped thing splashes down when they return to Earth and has the parachutes. Those parachutes, made by hand, took months to stitch them. And they had to be folded in a very precise way. Only 3 people were qualified. And NASA never let them travel in the same vehicle because they had nobody else to fold those parachutes.
To fold them? Only 3 people could fold them.
To fold them safely. Like everything had to be absolutely precise.
Imagine that being your job. What do you do for a living? Oh, I fold the parachutes. Yeah. That
astronauts.
Yeah.
We're coming back from the moon.
So you want good quality parachutes. You won't go people stitching them and folding them.
You wouldn't want one of them ones that the when your dad used to bring you to the park. You know, like the red and the blue ones. My dad never did that. But just kind of, that's the...
What you'd imagine happens.
Imagine happening when your dad's around. to do that with you.
But it doesn't. It doesn't. You're not missing out on
that's
much.
That's all in the films, is it?
400,000 people worked on the Apollo program.
400,000?
Universities and private companies did a lot of it.
There it's was a big number.
400,000? Did 400, you say 400,000?
400,000 people worked on it.
It's a small country.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
It was, 4% of the national budget, which that's is huge.
Insane. Yeah, that is.
And I mean, a lot of people year. Weren't happy about that as well. It wasn't like everybody thought the idea was great. A lot of people were like, there's a lot of very hungry people in this country. Why are we spending so much on...
When you say 400,000 people, are a lot of them just like doing coffee runs and stuff?
Well, some of them are folding the blade and parachutes.
Only three of them.
will you just... What's my job? Just press that button.
The go button.
Just that button there.
Right, we're there at last. Launch day.
Oh, brilliant.
Dum-dum-dum.
The moment we've all been waiting for.
July 16, 1969.
Oh, it was a sunny summer's day.
Do you want to hear something or do you want to just...
Yeah, let's hear it.
I can remember, and I'm sure you can too, David, when we were kids, that one way of separating the nuts from the normal people was to ask a person, do you think a man will ever be on the moon? And if he said yes, you chalked him up as a nut.
Right.
And if he said no, you said, well, that fellow's all right.
Well, it's about to happen.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is July 16th, 1969. And we are all about to witness the fulfillment of that promise that President Kennedy made.
It's Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins on the voyage man always has dreamed about. Think of those three men and the burdens and the hopes that they carry on behalf of all mankind.
A moment many Americans, many people never believed could happen or would happen.
It's getting mighty close.
Be tense.
Memorable.
Right.
Be tense. They would say that you could always tell when a launch was coming up because every pharmacist in the area would be all out of sleeping pills and waking pills and everything.
Why?
They're all stressed to bits. The rate of divorces and breakdowns and everything, everyone working on the Apollo mission for like years off the charts. Because they were working around the clock.
Happens under huge stress. Too.
I would say podcasting and sending someone to the moon for the first time are actually striking
on par. Similar.
Neck and neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Up there with
coin toss like.
Absolutely.
If I do get it when I go home.
The same way Armstrong would get it.
For being in space too long. I get it.
Yeah. Are you still in fucking space? Come on.
I fucking got a full chicken yesterday for today. And you said you're going to be home at 3 o'clock and it's 10 p.m. Let me smell you.
What do you mean you were walking on the moon? You were supposed to be home an hour ago.
Let me fucking smell you. I'll lie in your air, Neil. You won't fool me this time. I know what you are, which I want. And is he the one that's real reserved?
Mm.
He's just up against the wall.
Not saying that.
No, what? I was just with Mike Collins.
Look, I brought you a rock.
She just slaps it. What the fuck? You? I don't want fucking that. I'm at the man putting a full chicken on into the oven and things black.
Imagine
the thing's burnt to a crisp.
It's fucking cremated because you were now picking up rocks. Fucking rocks.
So they wake up at 3:30 in the morning. They go for breakfast. Steak and eggs.
Oh, what a breakfast.
Yeah.
Full Jesus. Of protein.
Yeah. Off, get suited up in their helmets.
No videographer back then to get some good shots.
There was.
Oh yeah.
The Apollo 11 documentary, it's all there.
Is it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but it's really grainy.
No. Perfectly touched up. It's unbelievable.
Stanley Kubrick directed it.
Yeah.
Masterpiece.
Space Odyssey.
Well, yeah. We'll get to it. Still dark out. Before sunrise, they walk out to a little bus to take them off to the launch pad. They're carrying these white briefcases, which is pure oxygen. Going into their helmets because if
in the briefcases,
little white briefcases, because if you've got any nitrogen in your blood and you take off, you could die.
Oh.
The bends, you get little bubbles in your blood and
Jesus.
Die.
Some buzz.
Michael Collins is carrying a little brown paper bag with his one.
Why?
Yeah, looks very out of place. We'll come back to that in a second. They go to their launch tower, so they go up the tower in the lift, 36 stories.
I'll do up here.
Yeah, well.
Is the lift in the fucking rocket?
No, the lift is, it's a big red launch pad tower beside it.
Oh, yes. I know it.
It's a beautiful sunny morning, not a cloud in the sky. A million people have showed up to watch it in person.
No way.
A million people.
Wouldn't that have been something to see?
Spectacle.
And the footage of it was great. Camper vans and cars, like just as far as I can see. Cowboy hats
like
were
mine.
Still very big. You would have had a good few trucker hats, yeah.
Florida, yeah?
Florida, yeah. Cape Kennedy in Florida. Loads of miniature American flags, loads of cowboy hats. Everybody else is at least 5K back from the launch pad. Because if it was to blow up at launch, it could throw shrapnel as big as 45 kilos. Just short of 5K. I would have put them a bit further back, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't be standing in the bomb site there.
The biggest scheduled TV event of all time. A couple hours before launch, they walk across the bridge. I'm not sure I'd even have to... I don't know if I'd walk across that bridge.
I'd have to crawl. I wouldn't mind getting into the rocket, but I think I'd have to crawl. Up,
and it's an open metal bridge.
Yeah. There's a building in Madrid where there's like a floor, but it's glass. And you have to walk across it to get into a restaurant. It's very fancy. I have to sit down and scoot my arse across it.
And of course, you're walking across that bridge, you're not basically going to go and sit on top of a bomb, which is essentially what they're up to. They climb in, and as they do, Michael Collins hands his brown paper bag to a man called Gunther. Also German, wasn't a Nazi though. And in it is a baby trout that's been stuffed and stuck on a plaque.
Why? Like Billy Bass that sang the songs.
He wants to give Gunther a present.
Take me to the river. Yeah.
It looks exactly like that. He wants to give Gunther a little present. Everyone was
that's
a big fan.
That's a shit present.
Yeah. Gunther was a fisherman and he kept talking about how he loved fishing for trout around there.
Oh, right.
So Michael Collins went off and got him this and I had a little plaque. It said like Gunther's prize trout or something.
I'd say Gunther was like, thank you. Yay. A fish on a plank. Thanks. So they'd have to be sitting up there for ages until these boys went back. The people that were carrying that stuff, the little helpers. And then they'd have to, would they have to leave 5K? Was the...
Yeah, yeah.
Was that 5K away?
They closed the door, tightened the hatch. Be going back to check that a few times.
Like the back door.
They're closing it by hand.
Yeah.
The three lads get in, strapped into the seats. They lock the hatch and then everybody else legs it.
And then you're on your own.
And the rocket's just humming away underneath you.
Girly that is.
The person that you last saw, probably Gunther. That might be the last person, apart from the other two sitting beside you.
And you gave him a fish. You know that your last act could be giving someone a fish.
They're sitting there and they did have a thought, Michael Collins certainly had a thought, that this rocket has only flown, not this specific one, but this type of rocket has only flown, what would this have been, the fourth or fifth time? Law of averages. Pretty soon it's going to be an accident one.
This
a
specific rocket?
This nature,
okay.
So rarely tested. It is only a matter of time before one like blows up or whatever. Just have to hope it's not today. The Saturn V is the name of the rocket. As tall as the spire.
Is it?
Jesus
Christ. The largest machine ever built at the time.
Jesus Christ.
It is, and until the last couple of years, the most powerful machine ever built. The Artemis rocket is slightly more powerful. Not as big though. And this was the difference maker. This is why the Americans won, really. Because they could get into space. Because it breaks into stages. So, if you can see our little model there, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
If you lift it up. And
like that?
Yeah, and pull away the bottom. That gets you going. The first stage.
And that's still floating around in space.
No, that fell into the Atlantic Ocean. And I believe was fished out many years later by somebody working for Jeff Bezos.
Oh, really? And then you're left with this.
Does it kind of feel like we're in primary school?
Is that a good thing?
Should we know this?
Not in a bad way. Like just,
and then this falls away as well. That falls away.
That next bit is your second stage.
And then that falls away in space.
Again for another few minutes and gets you further and faster.
Okay.
And then that falls away. And then you got your third stage. That gives you a little shunt out into space. And then that comes off. And inside that cone bit, that's where Eagle is stored.
Inside this white bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Columbia will.
That's that, see?
And it turns around, and we'll get to that in a second. So this was the genius of Wernher von Braun. This massive, massive machine that broke up and got you to space. And the thing is, if you had one rocket that tried to get all the way to space, you'd need so much fuel because it would be so heavy. And for a long time, they thought that's the only way to get there. So he came up with this multi-stage rocket idea, which is Saturn V.
Isn't it amazing what humans can do?
Yeah. When you look at the state of us, like,
We're fucking idiots, like.
Like, the person who made that is just a human, the exact same as me.
One person made all of that.
And they, yeah. One plus 400,000.
And a stepladder.
Yeah, that is, it is an incredible feat.
6 million parts in that. Yeah.
I think that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Same as, like, the Titanic and phenomenal. Everything. It's just fucking...
If you were to believe it.
Well, like, oh no, but...
Yeah, I'll give you some Saturn V stats for you here, which, for your benefit, Darren, include Jack Russell references. 363 feet tall, so pretty much the spire. Fully fueled up, it weighed 3,000 tons, which is the same as about 650 elephants. Or...
The Hulk.
Or about 430,000 Jack Russells.
430,000?
Yeah.
I'd love to rub all them.
I knew you were going to say that.
Did you?
And I did the calculations for you.
How long would it take?
If you were to pet two at the same time, but giving them each a 2 second pet, that would take you 60 hours to pet every single one of those Jack Russells.
60 hours, hey? You're bound to get one angry one, though.
Oh, there'd be a few biters, a few nippers.
Yeah. Especially all them dogs together.
Oh, they'd be fucking running around and all.
You'd be at each other,
the bollocks,
yeah.
Wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Humping and everything.
Dirty bastards.
There'd be actually more to rub after. By the time you finished, one of them would give birth. And there'd be just spiral from that, and there'd be more to rub then.
And then you'd be bollocks. That's the straw that broke the camel's back.
So, the Saturn V, right? The big problem with getting away from Earth is gravity is very, very strong, and it's really hard to escape it.
Whatever it is.
So you just need brute fucking power. It's just obnoxious power. At launch, it had 3.9 million kilos of thrust, which is equivalent to almost a million cars, like your average everyday car, 7,000 Formula One cars, or 250 737 planes, which is your standard Ryanair Aer Lingus plane. So the power of 250 of them used 20 tons of fuel per second. The fuel was a mixture of kerosene, nitrogen, and pure oxygen, which they just released them and let them meet and it would explode.
It's what speed did it go up?
It got up to about 36,000 miles an hour or something. It was the fastest humans had ever gone.
That's very fast.
It's very fast. No, yeah.
36,000 miles an hour.
I have it here. It's on one.
You think when it was going up, like everyone that worked on it was just like praying, like their fingers crossed, just praying that it worked. Because like, I feel like all of them would have been just like fucking.
Oh yeah.
Oh jeez, this might like just fucking crash. Like
it's the bombs. Like they were going on bombs. They were taking off on multiple nuclear bombs.
Well, if it had exploded at launch, which, you know, always a possibility.
Taking off on nuclear bombs?
No, but it would have been...
Like but the hydrogen, like, that's what it was.
It would have had 4% of the power of the Hiroshima bomb, which is a lot.
Did you say 4 times?
No, 4%.
4%.
4%, okay. Right.
Keep in mind, there's 3 people sitting on top of this thing.
Yeah.
Bit of rocket science for you. Cozy. Hope I don't get this wrong. If I do, I know we actually do have scientists who listen, so I apologise in advance. The launching part of rocket science isn't actually that complicated, right? It's Newton's third law of motion. Every action has an equal opposite reaction. So you're in a swimming pool, you push backwards, you go forwards.
What goes up must come down.
You know when you're in a pool?
Yeah.
Swimming.
Yeah.
And you reach your arms out.
Yeah.
And you pull the water back.
Uh-huh.
And your body moves forward in the water.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Obviously.
Yeah. But I'm saying
I wanted it to be cleverer than that.
No,
it's like saying, you know, when like you stand up and move your legs and walk.
Yeah,
that's walking.
That's walking
because you push force down, you go up, right? You don't necessarily need to do it with an explosion. In theory, and people have made YouTube videos about this, you could throw a bunch of elephants at the ground and you'd have the same effect. If somehow you could hold. Where's the number? I have the number. 3 elephants every second.
If you could hold 3 elephants.
If they could have done...
This sounds like a listener question.
I know, yeah. it gets worse too. Or gets sillier. 3 elephants per second would provide the same sort of thrust. 5,000 Jack Russells.
But sure... Between okay, so if you could throw that on the ground, then you would push yourself upwards. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if you could shed yourself of that much weight... In a second, you would force yourself, you'd force something the weight of the Saturn V up at the same speed.
Right.
You don't necessarily need rocket fuel, but rocket fuel obviously is a bit more practical than.
It's not rocket science, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
It was it would be the largest ever non-military explosion the world had seen, and also the loudest non-military sound.
Would it have went to it?
Oh yeah.
It was 200 It was 200
Oh yeah.
Would it went? That would be amazing.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I would have went to it.
Right, it was 204 decibels.
Spin 1038 probably would have sent us.
Oh yeah.
You two with the fucking rockets. 204 decibels, right? If you were standing within 250 metres of it, the sound alone would kill you.
Would kill you?
It would just blow you up from the inside out.
Ah, yeah.
Yep.
From the inside out?
Yeah, your bones would shatter and your organs would explode.
Because it was so loud.
So loud. Even if you're within 3 kilometres of it, it would cause you physical pain. Decibels are what they call logarithmic. So it's not like 100 decibels is twice as loud as 50. 101 decibels is twice as loud as 100.
Oh.
So, did anyone die from the takeoff in this vicinity?
No, because they all liked it.
Oh, you usually get a straggler.
But then how did it not kill the lads inside?
They had sound dampening and like they had...
That's some good sound dampening.
I just decided to not look that one up.
Yeah, because that's when we get into the conspiracy theory of there's nobody inside that fucking rocket.
I had spent a lot of time trying to figure out how much a Jack Russell weighs.
I see him walking onto it, but that's it then.
And it went up.
I don't think there's any footage of the door closing, is there?
Yeah.
There is?
Yeah.
Nah.
A Hoover is 70 decibels. Right?
You can open the door.
True.
So Saturn V is as loud as, I think, 25 trillion Hoovers.
Oh, it's a lot of Hoovers.
Yeah, and one...
Would he not just be as loud as Eternal, though?
25 trillion Jack Russells.
Oh, imagine the barks out of that.
Which would take...
What made you compare it to Jack Russells?
Yeah, because I knew you'd... I knew you'd want to talk about petting dogs. I don't know, I just felt like you'd go with it. And if you had 25 trillion Jack Russells, it would take you 1.5 million years to pet them all. If you're doing two at once.
How did you get that information? Did you use ChatGPT?
I wasted minutes of my time on Earth.
Did you use AI?
No, I didn't.
It was one sentence away on AI on ChatGPT.
Probably even quicker, yeah.
To know how quick it is.
Anyway, right, Saturn V, 204. Sperm whale, 230.
Decibels.
The whale.
Is louder?
Yeah.
The whale many is louder than louder. This. Fuck off.
Yeah.
A whale is louder than...
Yeah.
Nah.
There's a shrimp that's louder.
No.
A pistol shrimp.
But that's not the air.
He has a claw that he claps. No, but the sperm whale though. Sperm whale did its loudest call beside you. It could kill you.
Would it?
Yeah. 230 decibels.
Sure, when are you going to be that close one anyway? What the fuck?
All this power and high risk tech and everything, and the people running it, the average age of the flight controllers is 27. This is the people in the mission control who you see. And Like young Andrew over there, yeah. Yeah. And the flight director, a fellow called Gene Kranz, he was only 36. And so at 9:32 a.m., July 16th, off they go. A million people watching, hundreds of millions watching around the world. And three lads sitting on top.
And that's that. Thank you for listening.
I thought you were going to go, see you later.
See you later. See you later.
12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Oh, boy. Oh boy, it looks good, Wally.
The people on their feet now saying, go, you beauty, go, and here it comes now.
What a moment. Man on the way to the moon.
Velocity 12,472 feet per second.
5S4B to COI capability.
Okay. That's 9,000 miles an hour.
4B to COI capability.
There was a beach close to the launch pad. It turned the sand to glass. It heated up to like over 3,000 degrees. It's just, everything's on a very big scale. And the ground's shaking for miles. Buildings are rattling.
Surely there were some animals that died.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of animals that died.
How many Jack Russells?
Yeah, in Jack Russell terms, how many?
There was an Australian journalist called Darren Hinch. He said it was watching it from 5 kilometres back. He said it was like being hit in the stomach with a cricket bat. His thighs were left bruised because of the way the desk bounced with the force onto his legs.
All that just to go up to the moon.
Sitting on top of that.
Be shaky.
What would you reckon your heart rate would be? Michael Collins was 99. Neil Armstrong was 110. Buzz Aldrin's was 88.
Psychopath.
While riding psychopath, the bomb. Yeah. After launch, that first stage, the big, huge part of the bottom of the rocket doesn't just fall off, it blows off. There's 12 huge bolts, they explode.
When it comes off, like...
Yeah, everyone kind of holds their breath for a second. The astronauts hold on because there's a big jolt. And that falls away. Then it gets them 42 miles up to about 10,000 kilometres an hour. Then the second stage fires up. That goes for about 7 minutes. Gets them up to 37,000 kilometres an hour. As fast as any human's ever gone. Then the second stage has done its job, falls away. Then the third stage gets them out of Earth orbit. They spin around the Earth once, and then they're ready to head off to the moon.
It must be very quick. Like, they must go, if they're going at that speed, they must go around the Earth like in a 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Jesus.
And it takes us so long to fly to Spain.
I know. 4.5 hours.
Like, how can we not figure that one out?
We talked about this Apollo 8. Just to remind you, so your burn is what they call it to head off to the moon. So this is where you're aiming 240,000 miles away and you got to get it just right. The moon is also moving very fast. So a bit like if you're playing a pass in football. More often than not, you want to play it where your teammate is going rather than where they are right now. So you're playing ahead of them. So you have to aim ahead of the moon. So you're going to aim for where the moon is going to be in 3 days' time.
In 3 days' time?
Yeah. 240,000 miles away in 3 days' time.
I just feel like once you're in space, the moon's just there. Like, go on over there. Like,
yeah.
Don't be that far off.
And they did have, the computers did help them with the maths, but people checked the maths. Like, this was, these calculations were worked out, not by grand machines. People had to work this out. They do their burn for 5 minutes 46.83 seconds. It's precision stuff. And if they get it wrong, just like with Apollo 8, not enough, you crash into the moon. Too much, you fly up in space.
Like, there's no damage to the moon if it crashes, is there?
Are you worried about the moon?
No, I'm just saying, like,
who's going to fix that now?
No, like, I just want to know, like, what
there's holes all over the moon. You're like, hey, who's had to put in that fucking hole there? That hole wasn't there yesterday.
Obviously, the fucking rocket ship would be wrecked.
Oh, yeah.
If it crashed
into the moon,
It'd be wrecked. Like,
they're going about 37,000 miles an hour.
There'd be nothing left of it.
I know, like, I obviously know that, but I just...
How fast does a bullet go? Would he go faster than a bullet?
Going 10 times as fast as a bullet.
10 times as fast as a bullet.
After this little burn, as they shoot off.
Fuck.
10 times faster bullet, off the moon, into outer space. Nobody to come help them now.
That's so scary.
There's no one can come and help you.
That is so fucking scary, isn't
it? On your own.
Mm.
And it's kind of guesswork. It's like, I hope he got this right.
And it's things like the navigation. Like, if you hit the panel and you mess up the navigation, you got to go and check the stars yourself.
That's a scary thought,
isn't
it? It's like trees.
Compared to now, it's so rudimentary. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah. That's frightening. So fast.
Then, once they've that done, they got to do their docking, which is the bit where their command module...
Failed the mission.
I did.
Well, I would have.
So this, they're in the little third stage, right? They fire off. Then Michael Collins has to fly this out, the command module, spin it around and come back in and lock it into Eagle, the lunar lander. Right? You get it wrong. Eagle's walls, by the way, were about as... If you dropped a pen, you'd puncture it. It was like tinfoil.
So had they slowed down at this point? No. Are they still travelling 10 times the speed of a bullet?
I was reading an article in The Times, and it described the docking as like trying to make two lorries, both travelling at 30 times the speed of sound, touch wing mirrors without harming either of them, knowing that any sudden movement could end the mission. Oh, he does it perfectly. And as they're approaching...
What's the odds on doing it perfectly?
I mean, pretty good.
Astronomical.
Hey.
No, they expected, if everything went according to plan, he knew what he was doing. They've worked out exactly how they have to do it.
This is all very... too perfect. It's all gone too perfect, no?
Mm. Well, Joe.
Like treading a needle.
I don't mind telling you, that ain't going to stay the way.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Oh, where the fuck are we? So anyway, they're off to Earth, off to the moon.
off to LA. They were off to the soundstage in
Nevada.
Warner Brothers.
Nevada, yeah. That was the conspiracy. Take them 3 days, 240,000 miles away. So
you should do this around all the skills in Ireland now.
I can keep you two sitting in your seats.
It's impressive that, like, they did it. Like, perfectly. Was there any kind of hiccups?
Oh, there was. We're going to get there.
You know, where they're like, we're going there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's suspiciously perfect.
Yeah.
Have to admit, even where they landed, like, oh, smooth landing, flat ground. Like, they didn't land on the side of a mountain.
All that just to say to the Russians that we did it before you.
Got there first. Ha 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 ha.
Well, to tell everyone else we got there first.
And the Russians.
Showing our club. As they're flying out, it's, you know, they got bits and bobs to do. You got your two lads who are very serious. And then as Michael Collins is a bit more crack, NASA will give them like updates on the news, to scores from the baseball matches and so on.
When do you want to have a drink? Bottle of water or something?
Mm-hmm.
All just comes out of the bottle, doesn't it? And they have to like catch it. Is that true?
Or they use a straw.
All right. They didn't have straws then.
One day
they had spaceships, but they didn't have straws.
Well, they didn't have post-it notes.
True that.
They get the news and all, and includes a little report that Irishman John Coyle had won the World Porridge Eating Championships.
They didn't get that. Why would they tell them that?
Because it was like, you know, oh, here's the news and here's the sports scores, and finally,
why was that news?
Because it was just a little bit of a fun story to tell him. John had eaten 23 bowls in 10 minutes. And
I could do that.
Well, I'm just listen. Here's Michael Collins' response.
Alexander Aldrin in the oatmeal eating contest next time.
You're pretty good, Seth.
He's 22 up here.
I'm still eating.
He's on his 19th bowl.
Roger.
He's on his 19th bowl. I feel like if they weren't astronauts, they'd be losers. Like, that's the shit that they find entertaining.
Playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. Compared to the other two.
Michael Collins. This was an Irish fella that done it, yeah? Oatmeal. Why did he call it oatmeal?
I don't know. Porridge.
Porridge for...
As they approach the moon, they're on that slingshot route. But if they stayed on that, they just whip back around and come home again.
Mm.
So they have to get down to the moon. They have to do another one of these burns to fire the engines for a very specific amount of time. And again, a few seconds too much, you crash into the moon, or intercept the moon is what they used to say. Or too little, fly off into nothingness forever. They had to do this when they're on the back of the moon as well, because they just communicated with Earth by radio. And once they go behind the moon, the radio signal, it's all quiet.
That's scary.
Hello, moon. I'm Jarrell Backside.
What was that there?
That was just Michael Collins when they came around the backside of the moon.
What did he say? Oh, the moon, I'm back there.
That was Jarrell Backside.
Do you think I sound like what I said there?
It sounds just like what you said.
Right, listen. 1 o'clock, Houston time, July 20th. Aldrin and Armstrong float their way into Eagle. I don't know what took them so long, but 5 hours later, they separate from Columbia. Michael Collins, he would later admit this was the moment he'd been dreading, called it his silent terror for the last 6 months, that he wouldn't see them again. And he knows
that he's getting out of there.
He put it that if they got stuck down there. Now, he could also have to, like, if something went wrong with the lunar lander Eagle, part of his job was, if it was possible, he had to swoop down and try and rescue them. He had already decided if he lost them, if they weren't coming back, he would go home. He wouldn't stay and, you know, take his own life or anything like that, sacrifice himself with them. But he said, I knew I'd be flying back as a marked man for the rest of my life. And also, we'd have lost the two of them. He'd live with that guilt and...
How long would he, I mean, you probably don't know the answer to it, but like, how long would he wait there for if he lost contact?
If they knew why, like if the engine hadn't worked, that was it.
Would he just, I'll see us later?
Well, there was no reason. There was nothing they could do. If they crashed, if they landed and the ground did collapse, or something did go on fire, or one of the legs snapped.
At any point were they near death?
I think the whole time,
yeah. Apart from, like, obviously, this could go wrong at any moment, but, like, was there any point where something didn't work or...
We'll get to it.
Okay.
Things are not going to go smoothly for the next while. If something went wrong, that was it. There was nothing they could do.
But one little thing could go wrong, which would be a big thing.
Yes. Collins used to call it like a daisy chain of events. If one little thing goes wrong, it's a disaster. There's a lot of little things.
Was there a specific part of the moon they wanted to land on?
They had picked a landing spot, yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like...
They landed right on it.
Right on it. Too clean.
Absolute precision.
That's all going to change very soon. Aldrin radios back. The Eagle has wings and they start their way down. Collins floats off. He can see them for a while. There's no like homing beacon on it. So he can see them. He's watching them. And then they get far enough down, they get small enough, he loses sight of them.
We just look at that.
And they don't know where they are then. So he heads off around the back of the moon with his lanyard, with his 18 plans, emergency scenarios around it.
He heads around the back of the moon then?
Yeah, because Columbia is going to orbit the moon until...
So they're down on the moon and he's...
They are going down. They separate and the two lads...
Are just on the moon.
They start their trip down. The command module, Columbia, with Collins inside, he goes around the moon.
How far away is he from the moon?
About 60 miles.
Ah, oh, that's closer than I do. Well, it's still very far, isn't it? Imagine trying to see something 60 miles away.
He heads around the back of the moon, and at that point, he is the most, I suppose, loneliest is one way you could put it, or at least the most isolated. No human being has ever been further from another human being than Michael Collins was when he went around the back of the moon.
Jesus.
Isn't that mad? That's a mad one.
Where would you have to go on Earth to get to that point?
You couldn't.
Nowhere.
That is mad. Isn't it? Yeah. I'm going. That's me done now.
And later on, he gets sick of everyone asking him, did you feel lonely? He said he actually really enjoyed it. It looks quite calm, peaceful. But he did. He said he had like this profound feeling of if someone to do his account, there'd be... as it was at the time, on that side of the moon, 3 billion plus 2, within the two lads, and everyone on Earth. And on this side, 1 and God knows what.
Yeah, so far away, and there's nobody, it's just you.
Yeah.
And then everybody that exists, or anything that exists, is over there.
Anything?
Well, assuming there's nothing else, no other life out.
It has to be, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, well, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that.
Couldn't rule it out.
I mean, you can't.
You can't.
You can't.
Same oh, you that. Can.
You can.
Do you say you can't rule that out?
What, that there's something else? As in life? Yeah, of course you can't.
Little tiny bug.
Do you mean on the moon?
Yeah. There has to be some sort of something.
On the moon? I didn't think you were talking about the moon.
It's giant ants.
I was talking about the moon the whole time. What did you think I was talking about?
Space in general.
No, the moon, there has to be a little yoke.
No.
Nothing.
Maybe there's old buildings from when people used to live there. Or.
Meanwhile, back on Earth, everyone's watching on the BBC. Hell of a lineup. They had Judi Dench and Ian McKellen reading poems. Right?
Brilliant.
And at the time, a little known band called Pink Floyd playing the music during the breaks.
Who had an album called The Dark Side of the Moon.
They did. Over on ITV, they had Cilla Black, Cliff Richard and Sammy Davis Jr.
The golden era of TV, wasn't it?
Cilla Black.
Cilla Black.
On RTE, Kevin O'Kelly sat in an inflatable chair. He had a little toy of the lunar module and he's sitting in an inflatable chair on his own for hours. That was RTE's offering.
Not much has changed, huh?
Yeah. They head down. It takes them a couple of hours and then they get to what they call the power descent stage. This is the real business stage of the whole thing, right? The computer was taking them down. And they stand up in it as well, not like a plane. They're standing. For some science reasons, they don't need to sit down in space. And your little triangle windows. Oh, and the programmer who wrote the code for the landing, he only learned how to code 3 years beforehand.
That's probably when coding was invented.
Now, it has an abort button, right? There's a big button. You can press abort.
What happens when you press that?
Abandon ship. The top, the ascent stage, bursts off. Flies back up. Mick Collins comes around and picks you up.
With a big net.
However.
Come on, fellas. I got you.
My hero. There's a thing called the dead man's curve. Right? I hope I get this right. I think I'm going to get this right. It's when you've gone too low to safely abort. Because there will be a split second or a couple of seconds delay between when you press the button and the legs drop off, the lower section of the lunar lander drops off, and your engine fires and goes up. And you're still falling towards the moon. So if you press it too late, good chance you'll crash.
Yeah.
Also, if fuel runs too low, like less than 20 seconds, you might be goosed as well. So there was an abort button, but don't leave it too late to use it.
They didn't have to use it though. Am I right?
We'll get to it. In all the simulations they'd done, they had aborted and they'd crashed and stuff. They'd never run low on fuel, things like that. So, and as they start off, Armstrong's heart rate was like 76 or something. He's very calm about the whole thing. It's all taken about 12 minutes to get down.
Capcom, we're go for landing. Eagle Houston, you're go for landing, over.
There's no live pictures as well.
That's what I was curious about.
There is now. They had film cameras inside these windows here, pointing out, and you can watch that now. But at the time, that film would have to be brought back to Earth.
Mm.
The live broadcast one, they had one stuck onto the leg of the lunar lander. So that would send the picture back. But going down, if you're watching in Mission Control, they had little kind of little graphic moving across screen. But they had basically numbers and readings coming up that would tell them, it's moving this way, it's moving that way, it's going down this height.
So there was no live pictures of what?
Of
the landing.
The spaceship.
How?
Because they didn't have the technology to broadcast it live.
Yeah, yeah.
Send the signal. So if you're watching it on TV, they had like animations, or some channels had like little recreations, people acting it out and stuff. Animation on screen with the clock ticking. Beep, boop, beep, boop. And it was a radio show. You could hear them. They broadcast it live. Everyone was listening in. The chatter going back and
just
forth.
Just the norm then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's only later you kind of question it.
It's looking back on it, you're going to see how stupid, you know.
Yeah.
Swallow
flaws,
a brick.
The flaws, like.
Oh, you want me to just take your word for it? Okay.
So you only had noises. Oh.
They set off and they start their, what they call a power descent. Doesn't start off great. They lose radio signal.
Houston, we got data dropout. You're still looking good.
On the ping.
Roger, copy, good.
Okay.
And okay, they lose it again. They get it back. They lose it again. They very nearly abort the whole thing. They have no information coming back. All the information was coming back just through radio waves. And if the radio wave wasn't working, they had no idea what was going on. So they very nearly aborted it. Just as they set off, Armstrong turns to Aldrin and says, I think we're going to be long. As in, we're going to go a bit further than we should. And Aldrin goes, how the fuck would he know that already? But he also knew when Neil Armstrong said something like that, it was probably worth listening to. They fly facing downwards at first. So they're effectively lying and looking at the surface of the moon. They can't see forward. They can just see it passing underneath them. And Armstrong has learned the landscape of the moon. And he starts...
Me bollocks, has he? From looking at it?
From whatever information he had. He was able to tell the landmarks. There, you will pass... Because they knew the route, exact route they're supposed to take. Like, this is all down to the inch, basically.
Oh, I'm not buying it. That's when it... You know what I mean? This is when it gets a little bit flaky for me.
Okay. They know here's
a
crater
for me a while back.
Here's a crater, here's a mountain, here's a crater. You're going to pass this mountain, you're going to pass this crater, you're going to pass whatever. Right? And he noticed, he goes, oof, we weren't supposed to pass that for another 4 seconds.
What did they do then? Slow it up?
Well, he starts getting worried. Suddenly, big, loud alarm goes off.
1202, stand by. 1202.
And it comes up 1202, the number. Armstrong and Aldrin have no idea what that means.
1202 alarm.
At the time, is it?
It's just, remember saying the computer would throw up an alarm code and say,
number.
Something's wrong.
Mm.
I'm not going to tell you what it is, but something's going wrong. And it's a big alarm. People say it's the only time they ever heard Neil Armstrong slightly stressed. This is a big flashing red light and they're supposed to be 5 minutes away from the landing on the moon. They go back, there's a fella called Steve Bales, he's 26, and he's in charge of all the alarm codes. And the flight controller says to him, what does that mean and do we have to abort this mission? He doesn't quite know. So he calls one of the lads in his team, a 24-year-old called Jack Gurman. Jack, a couple of weeks earlier, wrote out by hand every single alarm code and put it on his desk. And he's the only person who knows what 1202 means because there's so many alarm codes. And he goes, yeah, it's fine.
We're going that alarm. Roger, we got you. We're going at alarm.
If it does reoccur, will we go? He's taking it as update.
The computer is overloaded. They were that close to packing it in, though. And in a split second, this 24-year-old says, if it doesn't keep happening, we're fine. We can keep going. This starts about 30,000 feet up. They get a 1202. Very soon after, they get one 1201, and they shout back, Same alarm. Keep going.
Roger, 1201 alarm.
1201 alarm.
Same time for go flight.
They're getting panicked now. They'd never had these alarms in simulations. Aldrin would later admit that these next few minutes, he hadn't been that scared since he was flying as a combat pilot in Korea. At this point, the alarms have been going off and they're being told, don't worry about it, keep going, it's okay, ignore the big flashing red light. Now, Eagle shifts its alignment.
Feet down.
They see the full moon ahead of them for the first time. And they realize the computer has taken them to the wrong spot. They realize we are not heading for the flat landing area we plan to head to. That is a giant crater with boulders the size of cars. We can't land there. And everyone back in mission control is watching this. They're looking at the numbers and the way they can tell from the numbers what Eagle is doing as it moves. And they go, what the fuck is going on? Because for the first time ever, including any simulation, it was going horizontally. It usually just went down. Armstrong, realizing they were going for the crater and the boulders, took manual control from the computer and starts flying over the top of the crater and the boulders. No one had ever flown it this way in any simulation.
So he was just going rogue? He was just doing his own thing?
It's Neil's mission now. He's in charge. And Aldrin and Armstrong were so focused and scared. They're not actually radioing back to say, we had to recalibrate our landing spot. And they keep looking for somewhere to land. Now, as you can imagine, the problem with flying horizontally rather than vertically and going all this extra distance uses up a lot of fuel you weren't planning to use.
Fair play to them, though.
Yeah, well,
so rallying it.
Give me that.
Well, when they started off, his heart rate was 75. By the end, it would be 156.
Jesus.
And this is the man who didn't get back.
He must have a heart attack.
Nervous wreck.
Low level. Low level. Good. 20 feet.
When they say low level, that's low level fuel. As he's trying to set it down, dust starts rising up in a way he's never seen, no human's ever seen. It created this cloud that he couldn't see through.
75 feet. That's looking good. Down a half.
50. Roger.
Forward.
60. 60 seconds.
A fuel left?
60 seconds.
Jesus.
Maybe less with that dead man's curve. They go too far and they can't abort.
Eject.
He looks straight out that little triangular window, sees forward. Top of a boulder forward. Through this strange cloud of dust, and he uses that to gauge how close he is to the surface.
30 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Fake shadow.
And four forward.
And the next call comes.
Four forward, drift into the right a little.
30 seconds.
30 seconds. Forward, just.
It's not a lot of time, no. I'll be smashing that abort button.
Contact light. Okay, engine stop. APA at a descent. Host control both auto. Descent engine command override off. Engine arm off.
And the home.
413 is in.
They're on the moon.
We've had shutdown.
We copy you down,
Eagle.
Thank God,
okay, everybody, T1. Stand by for T1.
Man on the moon.
Tranquility base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Twink. Tranquility, we copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Oh, boy.
Thank you.
What?
We're
going to
be busy for a minute.
Wally, say something. I'm speechless.
I'm just trying to hold on to my breath. That is really something.
And cut.
They had 18 seconds of fuel left.
It's so American, isn't it? They just have to make it dramatic.
Oh, a second ago it was too perfect.
That's part of the perfection of it, isn't it? It's too Hollywood. It's so, right. We're 18 seconds to spare.
Do you reckon Steven Spielberg was just in the corner biting his fingernails?
He was watching.
Right, nothing's good enough for you.
I think he was there. Wasn't Spielberg in the crowd watching the liftoff?
I actually knew that was going to be your reaction to all that. So, yeah. And back in the TV studios in Homes America, they cheer, they wipe away tears. It's all very emotional because man is on the moon. And supposedly, probably an urban myth. Well, he has told the story himself. They had a little tape recorder with them. Buzz Aldrin takes it out, sticks on Fly Me to the Moon. He would tell Frank Sinatra this story at parties as the years would roll on. There you go. 400,000 people however many years of work that we shoved there.
And the crowd fallen
president.
Around.
18 seconds left. That's what it came down to. That night, somebody goes to JFK's grave and leaves a card saying the eagle has landed.
Ah, that's nice, isn't it?
Wow. I'm just thinking about, like, break. There was other things on it. They're like, who the fuck is that?
Giant ants.
Coming what out the now. Fuck?
What yeah. the fuck is that now?
What's that thing? They'd be shitting.
Coming out walking like that.
Like, if you're seeing two astronauts get out onto fucking your planet.
Be fucking terrifying.
You'd be like, ah, yeah. Leave a fucking out.
Oh. Anyway.
And they still, well, what did he, we'll have to get into what they do for 2 hours. And did he have to get off the moon as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, Buzz Aldrin was more worried about getting off it than he was landing.
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Okay. That was, then you have to get back to Earth.
Mm. And then you have to deal with the publicity of it all. You become the most famous man in the world.
Well, some of them didn't deal with it very well. Oh, sorry. Last thing I forgot. Oh, no, wait. I'll tell you that in the next episode. That's still to come.
Oh.
So.
How they picked who'd go first.
Is the next episode the juicy one?
They're all juicy, Darren. They're not safe yet, like, just because they've landed with their 18 seconds left.
What about the bits Joe came for?
Well,
oh, yeah.
I have my own theories. I'm going to come back with my own theories. You can try debunk them if you want.
Well, most of the conspiracy theories revolve around kind of their time on the moon, doesn't it? And looking at, like,
the flag didn't have a shadow or had a shadow.
We'll talk about the flag.
It's all in it.
The flag. Why is there no dust? And all that stuff. Joe, we never got any of your mad conspiracies.
Next week.
We'll get into them all.
The Lost Cosmonauts.
We'll get into them all.
That's a good one.
They're all good. They're all good. Oh, this is the best for conspiracy theories.
Moon is hollow.
Yeah, it's a good one. That's what they were afraid of. They were afraid of cracking through it.
What if there is no moon?
And it's just a projection?
Oh, like that's a hologram.
Okay. You seeing the moon at 2 o'clock today?
Unheard of.
A few astronauts.
It's almost
in the moon with strange thoughts about strange things.
Really?
I've said strange things. Right.
See you next time.